prosperity that relies primarily on covet means for expanding its sphere of influence. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not publicized. Its stakes are buried, not headlined. Its percentages are silent, not praised.
Billions of people just living out their lives, oblivious. Choice is an illusion created between those with power and those without.
I drink your milkshake. I drink it up.
Thank you, John Larson. I receive your kind words on behalf of all of our courageous members of the House of Representatives who want the best for the American people. And what we can do that is best for them in the next 24 hours is to pass affordable, accessible health care for all Americans. The best for all Americans is to have 32 million more people to have health insurance in our country.
Oh.
The best for...
Piece of stinking filth.
Sitting a shop. This is AJ of the InfoWars. Listen to the Shaliak. This is Alex Jones of InfoWars. Listen to Shaliak on the Cold Reality News and Report.
This is the coolest thing I have ever seen.
Well, hello there!
Alright, great folks. Clint Richardson standing in for Shali today. Joining me is going to be Patrick Jordan. Let's see, make sure we have Patrick on the line. How you doing, buddy?
I'm here, old son, sitting by.
Very nice.
In the morning.
Yeah, well, we have a rather a deep show, to a deep concept to talk about today, and so I thought I'd start off by sort of, what we're going to be talking about is a concept called nihilism. Nihilism is actually what I'm finding out the very substructure, the very foundation of what we refer to as anarchy. Now, the first time that I really came up against the wall, the absolute destructive force that is nihilism, was, if people have been following me for a while, might remember my whole thing when I... Well, first we went to that conference and we had, we came up with a, against a bunch of Satanists or nihilists. And, at that point I started really looking and thinking about this and searching for what the hell's going on here. What is this sort of almost organized chaos that's going on around here? And I came up against this guy, Mark Stevens, and Mark Stevens is a force to be reckoned with when it comes to the nihilistic spirit. And I didn't, of course, know this at the time, what nihilism was. I was starting to understand what anarchy was, but I didn't really understand where this notion was coming from. And I also understood that the concept of anarchy today, specifically, dates back to a more romantic version in the 18th century. Of course, the revolutionaries and their desire to get rid of the old ways and reckon in the new ways. Now, how many of those revolutionaries were shills? How many of those revolutionaries were paid revolutionaries is a question that I now have. But what I found is that we couldn't establish a foundation. And I started out, I got Jan Urban, bless his heart, to try and mediate the debate, as if there could have been a debate, with a nihilist. and an anarchist. I mean, I try to imagine a state of anarchy where, I come up across somebody and I want to trade, and I say, "Hi, I'm a Christian." And he says, "Hi, I'm an anarchist. I want to trade with you. Let's make a deal." And I'm like, "Well, wait a minute. You're an anarchist, so you have no law. you want to make a contract or a deal which there would be no law to enforce. You have no higher law, no moral law, no conscience. What the hell am I? How can I possibly try? Why would you possibly ever publicly declare that you're an anarchist? It wouldn't even make sense. You know, nobody would want to deal with you, even your own kind, and especially your own kind. So it's a bizarre concept. So we spent the show, the entire show. First thing I said is, after our last encounter, I said, we have to develop a foundation before we can move further. We have to understand what the foundations and the principles of law are. Not because you believe it or I believe it, because that's what it's been for thousands and thousands of years and continues to be today. So before we can move on, we do have to understand that there is a common, you know, parlance of law that you follow, and you have a driver's license, you have this, you have that, you have all these different things. So you're not an anarchist in any way. You just play one on TV. And, you know, you've got these millionaire guys doing these anarchists, anarchy shows, and I'm like, but you're a millionaire. You're a corporation under government. How can you be an anarchist? Right? It doesn't make sense. What I really found out is they're not anarchists, they're nihilists. And that is a distinct quality that we need to uncover today. Because I realized then that because we couldn't establish even a foundation, and I want to talk about why we couldn't establish a foundation, what is nihilism, I started figuring out, you know, I have come up across this before. It's been the callers that call into my show and act like complete idiots that will not accept anything as fact. And I realized that nihilism is not just a belief. Excuse me. It's not just a belief system, it's a disease. And that's what I want to start off today with, because, Patrick, we are in a very diseased state in these days. We are in a very nihilistic culture, if you haven't noticed. We can start with just the alternative media, of course. What is the alternative media based on? What has it been based on for 30 years? The end. The end of what? We're not quite sure. The end of the current system, the end of money, the end of perhaps government, the end of sovereignty, which nobody in this country enjoys unless you're one of them. The end of lots of things, but it's always the end, isn't it? It's always nothingness. It's always prepare, 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 get your storable food, get your storable gold, get your storable water, get your storable guns, put them away, waste your money, and save them for that nihilistic goal of nothingness. Well, okay, that's one example. Can we think of other examples? How about entertainment? How about our entertainment? What do we see in our entertainment? We see basically zombies, the dead, right? Nothing but fucking dead people walking around trying to eat each other, and that's the most popular fucking entertainment we have right now, right? And we just love it. We just can't get enough of it, right? We have war simulations. Think about your entertainment today. We have war simulations. We have robot armies taking over humanity. We have viral flesh-eating zombie apocalyptic settings. We have aliens invading and destroying the world. We have us destroying our own world by tinkering in science. We have the plague and the flu epidemic movies. We have the vampires, the monsters, the parasitic infections, right, which we always talk about. And all sorts of just basically futuristic tales of how, what, technology, art will kill us or absorb us into its mainframe, you know, to become the AI's pleasure, as you say. We must be absorbed into the AI to further its knowledge. That's straight out of John Dies in the End. If you've never seen that, I highly recommend it. We must be absorbed into Korok, so that Korok may know our knowledge, absorb our knowledge as well. One of my favorite movies. But hey, yeah, that's where we're at. We've got a fucking end of the world disease going on right now, Patrick. You and I are not immune from it. We talk about these things, but we talk about them in a way that we actually want to change it. We actually don't enjoy the thought of the end, although the notion of the comets coming, I agree, is sort of appealing sometimes just to take us out of this freaking nightmare. But we're in a state right now, Patrick, of nihilism. Nihilism has become the cultural meme. And that's where I want to start the show today.
So it's all your fault, Clint. I've been trying to read Jean Baudrillard's book, Simulacra Simulation. The last chapter is only 4 pages long. It took me 3 days with a dictionary to get through it. And what I realized when I finally finished it, because you made me read the chapter, I mean, it's like I'm obsessive compulsive, and once you said we're going to cover it, I had to read it. And this is the first time I did not feel lonely in the world. It's like, oh my God, here's a guy that gets it. And if you and I get to the last pages where he talks about terrorism, so I'm not going to presage it, but when we get to that point, it's like he talks about this cancer that we're in. See, when you have cancer, it's a part of you. So we can't do the Christian, you know, the fundamental Bible-believing Christians always think that they're in the world but not of it. Man, the world is in you. It's a cancer, and what Jean, I'll just call him that because it's easier, what Jean had said is, don't worry about the apocalypse, because that's the other meme. You know, the end of the world is coming. Jean said, the end of the world is already beyond a smoking mess. And that's, to me, that's the psyop. It's like, it's coming, it's coming, it's coming. And
yes.
Baudrillard said, man, it's already done and gone. And you're, like, suffering beyond the aftermath of it.
Well, that's the thing. That's what I'm trying to, I think that's what he was trying to say, and what I'm trying to get across is that today's, the modern anarchist, the modern nihilist, is playing the part of something that existed before that apocalyptic event, whatever that was. And it's not a singular event, it's an incremental thing. But and when we're talking apocalypse, what we're really talking about is the purveyance of knowledge or information, right? Revelation and apocalypse means knowledge. And the Bible says they will be going back to and fro, and their knowledge will be increased, but they'll be confused as hell. They won't know anything except false information. And that is the apocalypse. So we're suffering from technology. We're suffering from new languages that allow everybody to basically have one big Tower of Babel. We're literally suffering from the information age. Right now, our voices are being recorded, picked up by a microphone. Those airwaves are being transferred into information sent over the internet and regurgitated into what you are hearing right now. What you are hearing right now is a computer code. Alright? And that's all we hear anymore. We hear information that is being put forward to us that is no longer real. It's no longer of the real, as he says. It's hyper real. Everything is hyper real. Part of the nihilistic movement or the anarchist movement was the destruction or killing of God. And as Nietzsche and those guys, as Baudrillard points out, he says that God did not die. God cannot die. God is reality. God is nature. But what God became to us was entertainment. What God became was hyper-real. He became something that almost like of a science fiction nature. Whereas before, the concept was taken seriously. Now, whether it was believed or not is not the point. People took an oath to God and they kept their oath or their vow to God. When they got married, for instance, their vow was not to each other. It was to God to keep a promise. When I invoked the name of God, I was doing something that was real. It was not something artificial. It was heartfelt. It was sincere. It meant something. Now, I don't give a shit what people think about that today, because we're suffering from nihilism. We're suffering from all of these horrible things. Today, when I try to invoke God, people laugh. People think it's funny. People think it's crazy, which is, and as he says in the book, he says we're suffering the consequences of our own nihilistic destruction of the meaning and the appearance of what God is. Okay, the word God, to be specific, right? And that was the first couple stages of nihilism back then in the romantic sort of revolutionary aspect of anarchy, when it actually meant something. As he says in the book, he says, you know, it would be cool and almost rewarding or romantic to be a nihilist if there was still something to fight for, if there was still something to end, if there still was meaning out there, it would be great to be one, but we've already destroyed everything. He also compares that to terrorism. He says, you know, the concept of terrorism, it would be wonderful to be a terrorist if there was still something to die for. But there's not anything to die for. We've killed everything. We've killed the meaning. We've annihilated. You know, annihilation comes from nihilism, which is nothingness. We've annihilated meaning. We first annihilated the appearance of meaning. Then we annihilated meaning. And now we're in a place where we're simply just destroying transparency, is how he put it. In other words, nothing is clear. We're in a meme right now, Patrick, and you've noticed this, I think, more than anybody, where we are saying that reality doesn't even exist. We're being told about the holographic universe and quantum computing, and everything must be something other than it is.
The world is flat, man.
The complete opposite of the notion of Christianity and God, which is literally nature worship, worship only what is real. Here we're talking about nihilism, which that there is nothing. This is why I couldn't speak to Mark Stevens, because he said there is no meaning to anything. There is no definitions of words. Oh, you're looking in a legal dictionary, you fucking idiot. How can you look in a dictionary to find the fucking meaning of a word? Right? So how do you fight against that kind of thinking? And the answer is you don't. You cannot fight against that kind of thinking, because that kind of thinking doesn't exist on any plane where there's any rules, because it's anarchist. Right? So
ancient Chinese saying, when man squeezes fish, it slips out of his hand. That's what you're doing. The harder you tried to squeeze,
yeah,
the more slimy the fish became, and you lose grip on it. And that's a tool of anarchy.
And this is where we're at right now, because everything I see, first of all, you know, every video is the end times are here, everything's ending, meaning is ended, nothing exists anymore. You know, the everything is being psyoped, if you will, towards this nihilistic thought pattern. And what that does is, according to his view on it, which I think is a very, very, very good view, and when I found this word, as I said, you're always looking up words like I am, he referred to the fact that it makes us all melancholic, or have melancholy. And so I looked up melancholy because I don't ever think anymore that I know what a word means. Right? I never just assume. I can certainly break apart, you know, the notion of colic being like bile or sickness, right? I can certainly break apart a word and attempt to figure it out, but I always go to the definition. Unlike the nihilist, which would say there is no definition, right? Well, why are you using the words? Right? So melancholic. Tell me if this doesn't describe the population right now. Tell me if this doesn't describe our audience right now. Melancholic is it's a melancholy, depressed in spirit, affected with gloom, dejected, hypochondriac, grief indulged to excess, a tendency to render a person melancholic, produced by melancholy, expressive of it, mournful. Like we're all mourning what we think used to be but never was. Unhappy, unfortunate, causing sorrow, one affected with a gloomy state of mind. Melancholy is defined as black and bile, melancholia, a gloomy state of mind, often a gloomy state that is of some continuance or habitual, as in, you know, customary. Depression of spirits induced by grief, the dejection of spirits. It is, in fact, when extreme and of long continuance, it is a dis-ease, sometimes accompanied with partial insanity. Cullen defines it as partial insanity without dyspepsia, dyspepsia is indigestion, I think. In nosology, mental alienation restrained to a single object or train of ideas, in distinction from a mania in which the alienation is just general. Moonstruck, madness, moping, gloomy, depressed, etc., etc., etc. Calamitous. Calamitous is very miserable, distressed, oppressed with infelicity, which is, felicity would be happiness, infelicity would be unhappiness, from external circumstances. I mean, just, you know, dejection is a casting down, an oppression of mind, lowness of spirits. Tell me if that doesn't describe at least my perception of what I see throughout the alternative movement. People constantly, you know, a good example is, hey, Jones, hey, Mr. Alex Jones, okay, you've just reported on all this horrible stuff, now what do we do about it? Oh, no, we don't do anything about it. No, we just report it. We make some money off it, we sell some products, but we don't actually do anything about it. No. This is expression, this is revelation without consequence. No. We don't do anything about it. If we did anything about it, we wouldn't have a fucking show, you idiot. Right? I mean, that's the... And people are calling in all the time, so what's the solution? What's the solution? Right? And there is none, because this is all invention. Right? None of this is actually happening. There are no end times, except what we make. Self-fulfilling prophecy.
Ooh, that's definitely from Terminator 2. There is no future but what we make. And what we're suffering from in this invention is the dialectic, which he refers to early in the chapter, of eggs are good for you. No, eggs are bad. Coffee's good for you. No, coffee's bad. Wine is good for you. No, wine is bad. It's always the earth is a sphere. No, it's not. It's flat.
Another one, the flat earth.
You caught in the dialectic of the new mimetic war of disbelieve everything, which Baudrillard would probably say, you know, that is a symptom of the disease that we're in. But like you say, it's created. Protocol of Zion 5:11 says, we must so direct the education of the Goyim communities that wherever they come upon a matter requiring initiative, they may drop their hands in despairing impotence. And see, that's that's the melancholy. That's the dialectic. It's like, good God, I don't know if eggs are good or bad for me. I don't know if the world is round or flat. And so then they become the creators of the hyper-reality because they are, and this is the hard thing to come to after having read his work, because I've always called myself a nihilist. They are the nihilists. So the world at large, not Pat Jordan saying, okay, let's get rid of religion, let's get rid of politics, let's get rid of society, let's have the comets. That's Pat Jordan and Jean speaking, but it is the masses that are impotent, that are not engaged, that can't make a decision, that have abandoned meaning. Abandonment of meaning, I think, was the first stage of nihilism. First or second stage. Because what he said is we're in a third and very dangerous final stage of nihilism.
Well, it's one without any roots in reality. I mean, there's nothing left to destroy, because the appearance and the meaning have already been destroyed of mm-hmm. of things. And we're in that,
oh, yeah,
like you said, we're in that last sort of phase, like he says, of destroying any transparency in anything. And it's true. I mean, you think about it. But let's make a point here, and this is why I gotta say this, because I see it now. I see what is happening. I see what the difference is between the Zionist Jew that writes something like you're talking about, which is the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, right?
Mm-hmm.
The people with a purpose, people with a purpose to take over. You know, these things are in the protocols, are happening. It's not you know, you can dispute the source, you can do, but you can also look at the foundations of that document and say, yeah, that is happening. Yes, that is happening. There's not one thing in that work that has not been executed, to my knowledge. Is that a correct statement?
I would concur.
Yeah, okay. So whatever the source, we know that the source is someone that is trying to destroy meaning and purpose. Right? That's a nihilist. Okay. Yeah, I don't recommend you call yourself a nihilist. So let me tell you, what is annihilation? Okay, nihil. Nihil, we know nihil is nothing. It goes to nil. N-I-L is the abbreviation, right? Nihil means nothingness. What is annihilation? Annihilation is the act, the action, the actual process, the act of reducing to nothing or non-existence, or the act of destroying the form or combination of parts under which a thing exists, so that the name can no longer be applied to it. And that's a really, really important aspect, so that the name can no longer be applied to it. Remember, name and noun are the same word. That means that the names of things, all things, persons, places, and things, that's all animals, all everything that you see and you say, oh, that's a dog, that's a tree, that's a computer, that all of these names can no longer be applied to it, because, hey, there is nothing. There is no existence of anything anymore. All right? So when we annihilate a corporation, it means we're detaching the name, the legal name, from it, so that it no longer has power. The state of being reduced to nothing, to annihilate, the verb form, is to reduce to nothing and to destroy the existence of, destroy the form or particular distinctive properties, to annihilate a house by demolishing the structure, so that the specific thing no longer exists, right? So we're talking about here the annihilation of the entire cultural works the Anglo-Saxon or the entire cultural works of the African continent, the entire cultural works of the Germans, which means germain or pure blood, the entire cultural works of the Chinese. We're talking about a multicultural annihilation that is leading to what we are seeing today, which is just this hopeless, lost feeling that you see in movies like 1984. Brave New World would probably be, I mean, I hate to say it, but that almost seems like the best outcome. We're seeing the annihilation of culture, the annihilation. We've already seen the annihilation of appearance. The meaning part is happening, and of course the transparency. So, I mean, I'm kind of freaked out about this, Patrick. Now that I've come to this understanding, this final sort of conclusion, which it's no coincidence that this was the final chapter of Simulacrum and Simulation, because you know. What is left after annihilation, the reducing or nothing to non-existence? Now, what I want to tell you people, and I'm not trying to get you to join any church or I'm trying to get you to read this fucking brilliant work called the Bible, or at least read my supplementary to it, which, by the way, I'm going to be posting a new copy of my book here, today or tomorrow, which includes all my new updates, about 200 new pages. I realized that I had to destroy the memes of both religion and anarchy and atheism all in one just to get people to go, oh, okay, well, now that all that's gone, now I can read the Bible with a clear mind.
You annihilated nihilism.
Exactly. You got to separate the Bible from all these things is the point, because the Bible is actually the answer to these things. It's not supporting these things. It's the answer. It is the solution, right? It tells you that Jesus Christ means Jehovah is salvation. What is Jehovah? And this thrills me when I say this, okay? The meaning of the word appears to be the unchanging, eternal, self-existent God. I am that I am. What is that really saying? It is the entirety of everything, the universe, all of existence, right? God is existence. It's not something that you can say I believe or don't believe in, okay? Because if you say you don't believe in God or Jehovah specifically, then you're saying you don't believe in existence. It's just another nihilistic form. And so you take the Bible, you completely twist it into dog Latin, into English. You teach it to people so that God is somehow this external old man like Santa Claus with his fucking naughty and nice list, right? Like you got some asshole always watching you, which in and of itself is not a bad concept because, you know, how many people are going to turn on pornography when their mother's in the room? It's good to have someone watching you, or to at least imagine that someone is watching you and guiding your actions so that you don't do stupid things. It's not such a bad thing to have an imagination, right? So the notion of this is literally to worship fucking everything that is existing, self-existent, not the creations of man, the creations of nature, creation itself. That's what we're to be worshiping because we're a part of that. Without that, we're dead. If we do not grasp on to what is real, what is self-existent and self-evident, then we die. And that's what we're going through. We have killed the meaning of God. We've replaced it with some weird religious, cultish image of a fucking guy hanging on a cross, which has nothing to do with God, really. We're going to celebrate Christmas, which has nothing to do with the Bible. If God or Jehovah, Yahuwah, I don't give a shit how you say it. You're not even supposed to say the word because it's so sacred. You know, if God means existence or all that is in self-existence, and nihilism is the annihilation of existence, or at least the meaning of everything that is existence, why, you know, which one sounds appealing to you? Why would you stay in this melancholic, nihilist thing if you can turn back to, I hate to say turn back to God because that sounds so fucking religious, but I mean, shit, in reality, turning back to your source, turning back to reality, turning back to existence, not non-existence, not some freaky, weird religion of, hey, nothing exists, and therefore I don't exist, and therefore I can do anything I want. That's Satanism. This is literally Satan, because all that Satan means is that which is adversarial to God or Jehovah. It means that which is adversarial to nature, to reality, to existence. I want people to really get this through their head, because, again, I'm not telling you about religion. I'm using the words in the Bible as they are trying to teach you. They're telling you to go back to fucking reality. That's all it's saying. It's not religion. It's just law. It's common sense. Forget the religion. Forget the fact that you think you know something. Just like you're reading John Baudrillard and you think you know what these words mean, I guarantee you don't. Because you only know this stupid, dumbed-down version of the English language that the king purposely wrote the Bible in to trick you and to make you call him God. That's not reality.
If I can, let's jump all the way back to the beginning of this chapter where he refers to Nietzsche. And because of your work, you know, years ago, Clint, I had reinterpreted Nietzsche's God is dead to God in all caps being a fiction, and Nietzsche making some kind of like Illuminati Freemason joke that God, as a fiction, was literally and always was dead.
Go on.
And that's it. I mean, you know, what do you do beyond that? If G-O-D, which appears quite often in many people's Bibles in all caps, which, you know, in the awake and aware community, everybody knows what lower and uppercase words are supposed to mean. Well, then God, as you have often taught, was simply a fiction. And so Nietzsche saying God is dead was, it was like saying that the sky is blue. And anybody in the know would just smile and go, yeah, he's right. Now you have recharacterized the M that I am, and see that I look at as a mosaic Hebraic joke. Well, who's God? I am. You know, because when Moses came down from the mountain, they go, well, who'd you talk to? God. Well, who is God? I am, because that's what God had said to Moses. Well, you know, what's your name? Who should I tell the people that you are? I am that I am. So the joke would be, Moses comes down from the mountain, and they say, well, you know, who's God? I am. But if we take that, Clint, and then apply it to, like, the Native American tradition that was attributed to, like, Chief Seattle, you know, well, life is a web and we're all part of it. Like you said, if we are part of nature, then we're not going to foul our own nest. Because the Native Americans had complete possession of the North American continent, and on the lands that they occupy now was, and still are, enormous reserves of gold and uranium. You know what they called gold? The metal that makes men crazy. You know what they did with uranium? Not a goddamn thing. But now Native American tribes, the Lakota Sioux, are being pushed off their reservations that they were forced on to get at the uranium. To do what? Make depleted uranium shells to kill innocent people in Iraq and poison the land for, like, what is it, 1.4 million years? You know, how is that fucking reality, man?
And everybody, you know, this oil pipeline is a good example. Speaking of this, you know, so many people are protesting it, right? It's going to go through eventually somewhere. And I kept telling people, look, you know, you have no right. You're unless you're going to invoke God and that it's your earth, well, then you have no right. You might as well sit back and enjoy the benefit. Right? I mean, there's, you have no right to do anything. Why? Why? Well, you always talk about, let's take our country back. I want to take our country back. Well, you can't do that. Because your country doesn't fucking exist. It's a nation. Nationhood is not a country. Nationhood is an identity. Right? It's where citizenship comes from. It is not a country. It is Washington, D.C. You want to take back part of Montana? You don't take back Washington, D.C. You take the fucking land. The land is the country. The land or territory from the Latin terra is taking back the country. But oh no, you want to take back the United States. You want to put a president in that'll treat us nicely. No, you fucking idiots. Don't you understand? Everything has been taken from you. Once they took your land, once they took your blood, once they tainted legally, imaginarily, fictionally, your blood, and took away your right to the land, then you no longer have any right. Who is it that you people who are supposedly protesting this thing because it makes you feel good, who is it that you should actually be putting pressure on? Is it your local government? No. Is it the national government? No. Is it the landholders? The landholders who are making the profits from renting out their land to the government or to the oil companies, who are doing all this fracking and all this shelling and all this shit that they're doing, who is it that's allowing this to happen? The landholders. Who are the landholders? It's not you. Oh, but I have a mortgage, a debt pledge. I owe a debt on this land. That's not yours. You're a tenant, not a holder. You don't have possession. You don't actually. Who is the one entity that can say no? Well, that's the landholder. You want to actually start making a difference around here, then you start holding up a fucking rope to these landholders and say, if you don't fucking cause a change in this fucking country, then we're going to have to do something about your ability to be a fucking landlord, a fucking horrible king of this land. If you're going to all get together, get a bunch of money to put this snake, as the Indians call it, across the land, well, then there's only one person to blame. That's the landholder, because they're the ones getting the profits and allowing that thing to be built. Guess what? It's their government. They, the landholders, are who is represented by the senator. Not us, not the commonalty. We're just here visiting. We're always trespassing. We have no right to be here because we have no fucking land of our own. We're always trespassing on another's land. I don't know why that is not clear. I don't know who I can talk to. to get that clear, but for some reason, what did Mark Twain say? It's easier to fool people than it is to convince them they have been fooled.
Oh, wow. Clint, a long time ago on RBN, and see, this is the difference between you and me and, you know, the people that listen to us and my list members that can get it in one. I heard once on RBN that Pennsylvania was not a state. It was a region. It was a territory of land that was granted to the Penn family by the king. And that estate has never been dissolved. It still exists. So you have your governor of the state of Pennsylvania, and then you have His Excellency the Governor, which is two different offices for two different concepts. One is the outward fiction. Oh, there's 50 states in the United States, and Pennsylvania is one of them. Well, Pennsylvania is a territorial region, and it's owned by a family, and that family has had possession and is not relinquishing it.
Exactly, and that's what every state is. What every state in the Union started out as a territory. And there's a reason that they make it a territory before, because that's actually referring to the actual geographical, you know, aspect of it, the land, right? And then they put this fictional government, which is the state government, over. So, again, the private people, they get together, say, we the people, the private people of the state, which means people, are declaring this our land, our state. We're going to have our government, and it's going to be in tune with the Union. And then, and only then, once they've petitioned government, does it become a state. Then it suddenly becomes a state. The president signs off, and it becomes a state. It's not as if states just form on their own, right? So then, now you have this private estate that they call a state, where some lands are retained by the federal government. Some lands are, of course, retained by the landowners, because that's the only way they can remain sovereign and king and do all this shit, make all this money off of us goyim who are trespassing and squatting on their lands legally, of course, with permission. Right? Then you set up the state government. State government has nothing to do with people. It has to do with the goyim. These are human capital management corporations called governments. They're municipal corporations from municeps. You want to know what you are? Look up the word municep. That's why you're in a municipal corporation. You are there with a permissive license from the United States to have residency, not domicile. Your domicile is the United States. Your domicile is a fictional corporation called the United States. But your residence, that is the state. Well, residence is not domicile. Residence means you have no land. You're residing somewhere temporarily. Right? And you do so with an easement because you have, you know, a public easement. You can't go on private lands. I don't know why people don't notice that. You come up to a road sign, you say, it says private land or private road. You're like, oh gosh, I better turn around. Well, who do you think owns that private land? What do you think that private land is? That's the people. The people that you are not. Because you've allowed yourself and you continue to participate in the nation. You're a fiction. You're not real. You've been driven into this nihilistic sort of way of thinking, even with citizenship. And you're left wondering, how do I take my fucking country back? And the answer is you don't, because you never had it.
So, protocol 1, number 5, it says, in the beginnings of the structure of society, they were subjected to brutal and blind force. Afterwards, to law, which is the same force, only disguised. I draw the conclusion that by the law of nature, right lies in force. And part of the problem, as I see it, within the construct of nihilism as we are examining, is that people want to talk their way out of oil pipelines and uranium mining and corporate takeover and electronic mind control and fluoridation in the water and you name any of the popular fears of modern man. They want to talk their way out of it, but what has the other side done to achieve their goals? They used force. What is the one thing that those who are the nihilists, the ones that are actually watching their own destruction, And at the end of the chapter, that's basically how Jean characterizes them. They're simply spectators. They're hyper spectators of their own doom. What is the one thing that they don't do? They don't meet force with force. So it's like, okay, we're going to go protest and we're going to get arrested. And boy, wasn't that fun? Boy, I remember back in the 60s when I protested and I got arrested too. But what happened? Nothing. Because unless you meet force with force, nothing will change, because all change happens with action. For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. But there is no pushback. So we are living in a really strange state of hyperphysics. For every action, there should be an equal and opposite reaction, but nobody's reacting. Baudrillard said they're just like being motionless protoplasm watching their own doom.
Yeah, and so you're actually defeated, you're self-defeated before you even step out, and make a sign and step out your door.
The melancholy.
Perfect example is that, we found out that it was the communist, mostly here in Utah anyway, and elsewhere, it was the Communist Party that was organizing the Occupy Wall Street protests. Now, I want you to remember one thing that Patrick just said is you got to go to the source and you got to use force. Right? Or at least let them know that you mean that to use force. Well, where was the Occupy Wall Street movement? Do you remember?
In the parks, man. In the
That's
free
right.
speech zones.
That's right. Occupy Park, we called it. Occupy fucking public park, because, yeah, Wall Street will notice. Wall Street will give a shit that you're taking up space that is usually reserved for homeless people. What a brilliant freaking nihilistic. I mean, that was over before it started. Right? That was a purely nihilistic. Let's not go to Wall Street. No, they'll actually be forced there to be reckoned with. Let's go to a fucking park.
Can I segue into what I think is like the most like dramatic part of his chapter, where he talks about terrorism? Because as a younger person, when suicide bombers first became part of like the international consciousness, I was thinking to myself, because in context, okay, let me back up. When Osama bin Laden first came to this country, he actually studied in American universities, and as a member of the Saudi royal family, he was interviewed by, and I love your word, a prestigious periodical, and they asked him what he thought of America, and he says, I can't believe that you people are growing these incredible lawns and spending all this time and money to manicure them when you could have a garden and being feeding the world. So this guy, CIA asset, notwithstanding, that this guy that had become like public enemy number one made an observation that is actually irrefutable. And so then we take that in contrast to the common idea of what a terrorist is, a suicide bomber, a Muslim extremist that is willing to turn themselves into spaghetti and meat sauce for an idea. But I always felt the sense when I was younger of, these people are idealistic. And what they're trying to do, the object of terrorism, is to get people to stop and say, what the fuck just happened? Why would anybody do that? What is going on in my life and my society that would cause anybody on the planet to even think that the only way to get my attention is to turn themselves into fucking pasta? And that's what should happen. But Jean, in his work, said that even terrorism, which should be the natural outcome of the final stage of nihilism, doesn't fucking work. And that's what I saw. That's why I felt such a camaraderie with Jean, because it's like, oh my God, even this guy sees it, sees what I saw when I was like a teenager, that here guys were blowing themselves to fucking smithereens, and people were just like shrugging and going, okay, yeah, whatever.
Calling him a terrorist.
And then accepting the label of the hyper-reality, never once doing introspection of, well, what would motivate a person to do that? What is wrong in my life that I can correct so that we're harmonized, so that the radicalized Muslim meme doesn't even exist? Because even that is a fractal spinoff of the hyper-reality. We're all caught in this new iteration of the fractal. So all you have to do is change like one number in the fractal, and it reorganizes. And so we've gone from appearance and meaning to transparency. And where we're at right now is, okay, well, things are transparent. People are pretty much aware that the Illuminati Freemason power structure has taken over the world, and it's like, okay, yeah, thanks, Alex. Again, that melancholy, that throwing down of the hands, the acceptance of the transparency without doing anything about it. But then Jean said, even if you tried to do something about it, like the terrorism, that it was still, and this is the sad part about it, it was still just another number to feed right back into the iterative, it's called a function generator, of the equation, and it will still spin out the same fractal.
You and your family are going to die. They're going to come after us first. I'm going to be dead here. I'm going to be dead in a year. My family, they're going to come after my family, and they're going to, they're going to kill me, and then they're going to come after you. They're going to drag you away to FEMA camps, and they're going to. What gets me the most about that, though, and I was going to make I hardly even want to waste my time anymore making videos after my last one, because, I made that note of video thinking I was being all clever, and all people did was attack the fucking messenger. Right. I can't watch this because some fucking monster, cartoon monster, is talking. I'm like, wait a minute, isn't that a fallacy? Aren't you attacking the messenger, not the message? Right? So I'm like, you know what? These people are so stupid that even if you try to entertain them, they don't get it. So, why waste the time? But I wanted to do this video taking all of the most recent, and there's been a lot of them, all of the most recent economic collapse theories and dates.
My God.
You're talking about every single person that goes on that fucking Alex Jones show. Let me think of some names here. Peter Schiff of the Schiff family, for God's sake. Ron Paul. Gerald Celente, all of Jones' usual roster of fucking fear mongers and quote unquote economic predicting, whatever. How do you know how many times? I mean, not only this year, but last year, the year before. Do you know how many times these guys come on and say that exactly on this date, on November 23rd? The economy is going to collapse. Better get your gold. On December 21st, the economy is going to collapse. Better get your gold. Oh, get your guns ready. Economy is going to collapse. These guys come on and they say that over and fucking over. And no one seems to mind. No one seems to care because it falls right into our nihilistic desires. We were like, oh, cool. I've even seen YouTube videos that say, finally, destruction is coming. We've been waiting for Planet X. We've been waiting for the Ice Age. We've been waiting for the economic collapse. We've been waiting. Finally, it's here. Thank God. Thank God that we're finally going to see the end of our existence. Oh, my God, that's so wonderful. I mean, isn't that the mentality we seem to be dealing with?
It's like
no
birth to 12-year-old
baby. No fucking consequences to someone coming on, scaring the shit out of people. Someone like Ron Paul, for God's sake, who says the economy will collapse at this time, on this date. Oh, never mind, that wasn't the right date. It's going to be this date. Buy my products.
The dinar is going to revalue. And like 5 years ago, they were saying silver is going to reach $300, and then you read the next sentence. And this is just a prediction. Silver could tank. And it's like, wait. You know, anybody that does a horoscope can do that. You're going to meet a tall, dark stranger, you know, that covers men and women. You know, what the fuck? And nobody calls them out on it because they're nihilists. This is what I'm saying. You know, I've always characterized myself as a nihilist, and we'll read that definition in just a second again, just to keep it fresh in people's minds. But when I read Jean's work, it's like, no, oh my God, the world around me are nihilists because they are party to that third stage.
Well, the question, though, becomes, are they nihilists, or are they sort of teachers of nihilists? It's almost like, you know, are they agents of the nihilistic God that doesn't exist, right? It's like they're trying to get us to be nihilist, not that, you know, because it makes them money, obviously, not that they're really serious about anything that they say, but as long as they can get us into that melancholic sort of responsive mode, if you will, to where we're buying products and doing things geared towards nihilism, then it's really easy to predict the market, to actually manipulate the market. You keep bombarding people with nihilistic media and entertainment, including your InfoWars and your all these different shock jocks out there. You keep bombarding people, then you're driving their purchasing power into a certain sect of product lines, right? And that's why you're starting to see the alternative, what they call the alternative media, and Fox News, and the whatever, you know, Fox News is now pretending to be the alternative.
Oh, cool.
And you see that they're selling the same products. Gold, you know, switch your retirement to gold, get out of, money, get out of fiat or paper things, you know, switch your things to this, buy storable food, we know the best, right? They're all selling the same, you know, the alternative and the mainstream are merging into one, is what I'm trying to say. It's going to take a while, but eventually it's going to happen. So we're seeing the end of transparency, if you haven't noticed, the end of transparency in the news. Because now, what does the word news mean? It used to mean something different 50 years ago. It meant, hey, you know, here's something that's the truth that we can look at. We can say, oh my gosh. Now, you can't trust it. And it seems to me that each news outlet is now competitive in the way that it says you cannot trust the other news outlet, right? Which is another form of nihilism. If you can't trust any of them, which one do you throw your hands up in the air, you pick up a fucking newspaper and you see two conflicting stories. One's about global warming, one's about global cooling.
Yeah.
Just throw your hands up nihilistically and say, what the fuck, let the end come. I'm praying for it. I'm going to prepare for it. Hallelujah.
Okay, so hold on. I gotta split my window here. Okay, this is funnier now, man. So let me read again the definition from Black Second of what nihilism is. Oh my God, where did it go? Okay, nihilist. So we're talking about the person, the noun, a nihilist, a member of a secret association, and I have to emphasize, because I don't think people get it yet. It takes a long time for memes to be erased from people's heads. The word mystery means secret. So a secret society is not a society that nobody knows about. It's not a like a clandestine cabal. I mean, it can be, but that's not what it means. It means a society of the mysteries. So the mysteries school from Babylon and Egypt was a religion, an occult practice that was associated with, quote-unquote, a secret society, but secret meant mystery. So it was a mysteries society, and like what the hell is his name, George Carlin said, it's all one big club and you're not in it. So you don't even know what the mystery is. And well, Oprah would tell you what the secret.
That's like organized disorganization.
That's beautiful, man. So a nihilist, a member of a secret association. So I'm reinterpreting Webster, because Webster was quoted in Black Second. In parentheses, especially in Russia, it's like, oh, where the fuck did that come from? Which is devoted. Now, see, that word devotion is a worshipful, ecclesiastical kind of word, which is devoted to the destruction of the present political, religious, and social institutions. And I just realized now, Clint, reading it, that I'm not really a nihilist as defined by Webster, because I'm not devoted to the destruction of present political, religious, and social institutions. I'm devoted to the destruction of them all throughout all time forever. And so then, when we get to what I feel, because I'm trying, we only got like less than an hour left, and this concept is so big, this is why I felt a kinship with Jean
Baudrillard.
I felt a kinship with this guy because he got it. Now he grazed across this very deep, still abyss. But he got it, and he codified it, and he leaves it because he is a wordsmith. He chooses his words carefully. He has deep knowledge, but it's almost as if he is like an adept within the dark arts, and he's throwing out little cues and little tidbits to see, are you smart enough to fucking keep up with me? And he came up with a word, and I'll read these two sentences. He says, if it is nihilistic to be obsessed by the mode of disappearance and no longer by the mode of production, then I am a nihilist. He's speaking of himself. Disappearance, aphanesis, aphanisis, implosion. Fury of the Verschwindens, which is probably a German word for storm. So I had to look up just what the hell, and I've got to like reference it in my paper that I wrote on this. And anybody can ask me for the PDF that I sent to my list that breaks down the words. Because, see, you have to read his stuff with a dictionary. Aphanesis, aphanisis. What in the hell does that mean? In psychoanalytic theory, aphanesis, from the Greek aphanesis, means to disappear. It is the disappearance of sexual desire. According to the theories of Ernest Jones, who coined the term in 1927. So what is that? That's a copy with no original. Some dude pulled this word out of his ass and cross-applied it. That's called hyperreality. If you really wanted to make a new word, then you would make a new word. You wouldn't use the word, the Greek word disappearance for something that you were trying to hammer on to, and what did he say in 1927? Aphanasis is the foundation of all neuroses. And so what makes people neurotic? Well, I wrote a book called Eve's Ill. So it's Eve apostrophe S ill. If you read it really fast, Eve is ill, meaning that, you know, after the supposed fall, all mankind got the sickness of whatever you want to call that, sin, whatever. It doesn't matter. But if you read it fast again, evil, Eve's ill. Well, from whence does this evil, this sickness, come? And why are we wallowing in it? Why is the entire planet like afflicted with nothing but pestilence, as the Bible would have us render it? Well, my contention is, and we've talked about this on air and offline, is that when I study all the legends of the world, they had codified what they considered to be hell. And I'm looking around with a very open mind, and I'm looking to my left, looking to my right, and I'm going, Jesus Christ, we're here. You know, it's, again, the end of the world, the apocalypse, as Jean said, it is not coming. It's beyond smoking ember stage. So it's like, get over yourself. It's already done, you assholes. And I'm saying, stop looking to, oh, you know, eternal damnation and punishment is, you know, in our future. No, you're fucking in it now.
You're right smack in the middle of it, buddy.
So what brings us here? And in my book, Eve's Ill, I postulated that because in the ancient Babylonian system of the mysteries religion, it was held that sex magics, which is something that Aleister Crowley talks a lot about, was the highest, most powerful form of the dark arts. And so I got to thinking about it, and, you know, again, Clint, it's like you said, if you're reading the Bible with an open mind, no biases, no predetermined assumptions of what you think it means, if we simply look at sex magics as being magics, and that puts it in the black magics category, the occult, the evil, then the nihilistic Gnostics, which was another religious sect, was, whether or not we take Harry Hubbard's word for it, that it, you know, that the scrolls at Qumran were created by the CIA or not, this sect held that to procreate was the greatest sin. So I'm taking all these things together and hammering them into one little steaming turd and trying to put a shine on it and go, what are these messages here? Well, to have sex is to summon a soul onto this planet. If this planet, like Pat Jordan says, is hell, then you are doing a magical ritual. And believe me, I've studied the biochemistry of a sperm meeting an egg. It's fucking magic, man. There is some physics there that is beyond description of what's going on. So there is something special there. But you're summoning a soul into a broken system, what I call hell. And this aphanasis, the disappearance of sexual desire, is what Jean had said should be part of this third stage of nihilism. But I disagree with him on that point, because I see people breeding like damn rabbits and summoning souls into this hell dimension in a fury. And it seems to me, Clint, and thank you for letting me speak this long, that the only way to extinguish this hyper-reality that we've been trapped in, like Lawnmower Man when he was like in these hyper-cubes going, you know, like folding in on himself, the only way to escape that is to stop bringing new souls into it. Because at some point, mechanistically, by mathematics and numbers alone, the population of hell should diminish to zero. And this is why I felt such a kinship with John, because he gave us the foundation for that, but he didn't say it. And then he gave a wink and a nod at the very end. And let's see, his quote at the end was, "This is where seduction begins." And this is what, Clint, this is why you and I get along so well. What the hell does seduction mean? The process of deliberately enticing a person to engage in a relationship, to lead astray, as from duty, rectitude, or the like, to corrupt, to persuade or induce to engage in sexual behavior. And so whether
that's marriage.
Want to...
That's fucking again. Marriage.
It's what?
It's marriage.
I love it. Whether you want to codify this as like abstract thought or actual making of babies, we all participate in the nihilism of creating hyper-reality because we can't stop replicating ourselves.
Well, that's getting pretty deep. So you're saying that because I don't have children that I'm going to finally escape this hell?
Well, you know, Clint, you know, think about this. We are all given a choice, so to speak. We're presented with a bifurcation. Let's just say that, because, you know, even the architect in the second Matrix movie would say choice is an illusion. We're presented with a bifurcation. We can take either path of this binary choice, and quite often it's either a stab in the back or a bullet in the chest. Nobody's ever asking about the third path. So if we choose to have children, then we have locked our DNA into this recycling and all the grief that comes with it. If we choose, or the fates somehow intervene, that we do not have children, then we have not voluntarily submitted our DNA for replication into this cycle. Does that allow us escape? We'll only know when we get there. And see, that's the big thing about all these predictors, all these gurus, all these religious leaders, is they speak with authority. And people ask me questions like this, Clint, and I go, I don't know. I've never been there. What happens in the afterlife? Should we go to the light? I don't know. I've never been there. But I'm going to tell you one thing. If there is some kind of fucking archon at the end of the light that says, hey, you know, you didn't finish your job. We think you should go back to Earth and, you know, make things better. If anybody else, arrives in the afterlife, when I do, just follow the screams, because I'm going to open up a can of nihilistic whoop-ass on anybody that tries to send me fucking back here, man.
Well, I mean, has it occurred to you that this whole thought process that you just laid out is actually kind of nihilistic?
Well, and see, this is what he says is the trap. Once you get into hyper-reality, where it sucks in on itself and becomes self-referential, the copy with no original, then we're caught in this kind of like wormhole loop. And the only methods of extinction was, he was saying, how did he phrase it, that terrorism was actually a valid consideration. But then he qualifies that by saying, you know what, terrorism really kind of feeds into the hyper-reality. Like I said, because people are so numbified that it's like, oh, yeah, another terrorist, oh, well. There's no wakening beyond that. But if there were no souls to be wakened, because here's the meme, Clint, And it's all about numbers because people can relate to numbers. Abstract concepts, they have terrible time with that. But the numbers are, okay, what if there are 7 billion souls in hell? And everybody wants to wake up the 100th monkey and get a mass reaction. And, you know, we'll get the herd on our side. And then what are you going to do? Have a revolution in hell, kill the devil, and take over? Well, if hell was mathematically reduced in population, then you wouldn't need to worry about, oh, do I need to wake anybody up?
Yeah, but again, you're now going even further into the nihilism, to where you want nothing, you know, you on the assumption that this is quote unquote hell, whatever that means. You're saying that to take the population down to nothing would be the solution. That's talk about nihilism.
And really, okay, so, and this is what Jean was saying. Let's get his quote, because it's
Let me clarify and support you here, because essentially what you're saying is very close to what the Bible is saying, which is to leave hell and come back to heaven, which is your reality, your nature. Stop participating in all things that make it hell on earth, and go back to the heaven on earth, and be part of the remainder, the remnant, those, you know, that small group of people, the meek, who will inherit the earth. So, I mean, you're not far off in what you're saying, even biblically. It's kind of saying the same thing but in order to leave hell, it's not going to be through death. It's going to be through voluntarily, leaving the cities, leaving all of the shit, leaving your identity, leaving your estate, and going back and, embracing the laws of nature again, heaven, in other words, because, you know, what is utopia? Nowhere. Somewhere where man hasn't touched. What is the devil? Man. What is Satan? Man. Because man is the only creature with the capability of lying, the capability of creating artificial things. And if that's what you're supposed to get away from, well, then that must be hell. So you're kind of on the same page with the Bible, though you might not like to hear it.
This is what Jean says. We are fascinated by all forms of disappearance, of our disappearance. Melancholic and fascinated, such is our general situation in an era of involuntary transparency. Now, that sentence is so deep we could spend an entire show on just that. And then he goes on to say, as a separate paragraph, I am a nihilist. And so, to answer your question, Clint, what I am proposing is the solution of the nihilistic stage, because what John had promoted in this last chapter was there were three stages of nihilism, and the last stage was so perverted that it actually created a hyper-reality. Now, how do we escape that? Well, he gave hints as to what methodology might break us out of that hyper-reality loop.
And Bastion, before you go on, well, let me just make an observation. Because it sounds to me like you are essentially, or we are essentially, laying down the whole scheme, the whole plan. The plan is to make everybody so nihilistic in their thought patterns, in their daily routines, in their entertainments, and in their, even in their studying, in their history, in their religions, that they will actually welcome their own extermination.
Correct.
And there will be that remnant left over that will be manageable after the depopulation agenda becomes a reality. It sounds to me like what you're saying is pretty much the thought process of those who are foisting this nihilistic sort of cultural meme upon us, that it will eventually drive us to almost thirst for our own blood, to want our own destruction. And I think that's already happened in a lot of cases. We're always talking, you know, if I was president, I'd bomb the shit out of those people. If I, you know, I can't wait for the zombie apocalypse so I can start killing with no, right? Oh, boy, if they have someone with the flu comes around me, I'm going to shoot them. Right? But we've already got that nihilistic tendency at this point to where there's no meaning to life. There's no meaning to morals. There's no meaning to God or the scriptures. There's no meaning to anything that would stop us from literally killing ourselves. Now we're passing laws for suicide, and of course they're creating more diseases that would want you to commit suicide. So it sounds to me like what you've been saying is kind of their agenda.
Okay, your observations are well taken. Let's just try to cross apply them to what we observe in the real world. James Burke did a review on history in his book called Connections, and he said the Black Death was a very interesting event in that a third of the world's population was completely annihilated. You gotta love these words. And yet what that did, and you can see this in microbiology, what that did is those that survived not only had like superior immune systems, but they inherited, and the governments as well, for people that were intestate, they inherited all the wealth of the ones that had gone away. And what that did is it enriched them, and there was a bloom in technology and mercantilism. And it was a process like you see in a Petri dish. If you inoculate a Petri dish with a microbe, and you have a nutrient broth in there, the microbes will start in the middle and spread out all the way to the edges, eating everything in its path until it has consumed it. But there is a dualistic problem in that once it's eaten all of its food source and then excreted its waste into its environment, then it starts to die back to zero. And see, what we're talking about in Jean's work is, he says, yeah, I see this nihilism going on. What you're talking about is like this rapacious growth and die back to zero. But he's saying because of hyperreality, it's not dying back to zero. So we look at the world wars, and we look at all the horrific death that's going on in this planet, and yet we're told that there's still 7 billion people on the planet. And so if there was a plan to diminish the human numbers, is not fucking working because they're breeding like rabbits. So therefore, the only conclusion we can make is, would it be working to the agenda of those that would have us be nihilists and watching our own doom to stop breeding, or because they use us as puppets to actually create their own ends? If we refuse them the puppets by which they manipulate the world, then their world, that hyper-reality, would end. And this is the metaphysical question that nobody answers, because, like I said, nobody's freaking been there. What happens after we die? If we knew the answer to that, Clint, there would be a whole lot of people opening up cans of whoop-ass on everybody, because then they would be assured that their actions were right. Now, hold on 1 second. Let me tell you a physics, a chemistry analogy to show where I'm going with this, because, you know, I do have like a final point to all of this. If you take what's called filter paper, let's just say if you take a coffee filter and you treat it with water, and you put it in a funnel, and you put the funnel in a jar, and then you take your chemical compound, you don't know what's in it, and you pour it into that filter paper. Since it was treated with water, it will let whatever is water soluble go into the jar. But if it has an oil base, it will stay in the filter paper. Conversely, if you pre-treat the filter with an oil-based substance, and then you pour your unknown contents into that new filter, whatever is oil-based will go through into the jar, but the water-based stuff will stay. And so it's a filtering process. And what I'm saying about restricting breeding is to filter ourselves out from hell into the unknown. We don't know what that is, but it is, you know, in the biblical sense, come out from her, my people. And if for all these millennia we just kept breeding, okay, you know, if we could only get it right this time, that's game theory. You know, it's gambling. Well, maybe if I come back, if the Archons send me back into the light and I can try to correct, you know, I made a mistake in 1986. If I could only correct that, then everything would be okay. Well, if we just filtered ourselves out and went to that place where we belong, because oil and water don't mix. This is what I'm trying to say, Clint, and I hope the listeners get it. Oil and water don't mix. We don't fucking belong here is what I'm saying.
Well, it does seem like that, and I certainly would say that the fact that we have to have a law that must be religiously followed, not a religion, but a law written or unwritten that we must religiously follow just to guide us to be able to be in harmony with the laws of nature, well, then, yeah, you're right. There's something wrong with us being here. Place would be although at the same time it almost seems strange to think of the Earth without this crazy fucking temper tantrum little child that is the human race, right? Like why create the playground if you're not gonna put children on it, right? So
okay,
I see that. I could certainly relate to what you're saying.
And I appreciate that, yeah.
I will say that the notion, like you said, about if we only knew what was after this life, I think one of the most important philosophies, the most important aspects of these laws, these principles that the anarchist and the nihilist would say, well, those don't exist, right? The important thing about having these principles is purely to be reasonable in our actions, which is to say we're not supposed to know. Okay, all you scientists out there who are creating genetically altered species, cloning, doing all of these things, you're not supposed to know this. You're not supposed to have a fucking blueprint to the human body, okay? That's reserved for a higher power that is responsible and is not a child and doesn't have the untold capacity to create fucking monsters like a kindergartner with clay. All right, that is not for us to have. We are to embrace what is given to us, if you will. This is why it's so important to have this fable, this story of God and creation and everything, the mythos, and with why it's always been around, religions, etc., is to teach us how to live it without want, right? Take what we need, but the law of science is that we cannot, and it's one of my favorite principles, my favorite laws, is that we cannot know our source. We cannot ever, ever figure out what it is that creates life or what our source is. We'll never be able to scientifically confirm God. It's an impossibility. When I say God, I just mean what is the creator or creation of life. That is not something we are ever going to know. And yet the entire industry and corporate structure of science and everything else, from CERN to you know, these huge colliders. We are not meant to know. We cannot know, because to know would be our annihilation. I mean, it would literally lead to, that's what it would lead to. It would be like matter coming into contact with antimatter, right? We're not supposed to know, and that is a law of science. It's a law of it's a law of, that's a law that surpasses the whole entirety of law or principles of law for every meme or art out there, which is that you cannot know your source. You cannot recreate your own source. It's not a possibility, and it's a very important rule that is completely being fucking ignored right now. Because we are messing with the very fabric and structure of life, like I said, like children, like children in little white coats, and it's frightening, it's ridiculous, it's unbelievable that the rest of us just sit here and, like you said, watch it happen. But I wanna say that the more I look at these definitions of nihilist, one advocating the doctrine of nihilism, well, guess what, folks? The word doctrine, why it's so important, why the Bible says no, do not have any other doctrines but the Bible? Because doctrine means law. It means rule or law. Why not? Why have no other doctrine or law than the law of God or the law of nature? Isn't it obvious? I mean, isn't it fucking completely obvious why you should have no other fucking law than that of reality? I mean, shit. It just makes sense. So one advocating the law of nihilism. What is nihilism? Nothingness. The law of nothingness? I mean, that's a frightening thought in and of itself. And what's so interesting about it, and why I say that it's satanistic, this line of thinking, because remember, Satanism, even according to the famous ex-Satanist, Mark Passio, who to my face said, oh yeah, Satanism is just that which is adversarial to nature. Adversarial to God, in other words. Okay? When you see that nihilism has the same goals as Christianity, true, in the true form, in the biblical form, right? To follow Christ is what? To leave the present political, religious, and social institutions, right? To pick up your stake, your participation, your citizenship, your membership to these things, and follow Christ back into Jehovah, which means, again, existence, self-existence, nature, reality, right? The laws of nature, right? So if I'm following the doctrine of nihilism, that would be the opposite of the doctrine of life. That's the opposite of the doctrine of nature. For God's sake, this is the epitome of Satanism, if you ask me, according to these definitions. Nil is not to will. Nothingness, a state of being nothing. Now, when you read the Bible, you're going to find this kind of nihilistic aspect in the Bible too, but it is from an old word. An old word that completes the notion or the parabolic law that says we are to be no thing, not something. Don't pretend that you are something, doctor, lawyer, member, citizenship, whatever. Be no thing. In other words, if someone asks you what you are, you say, I am. I am that I am. I exist. That's all you need to know. Nothing else. I am no thing. That is a very scriptural, spiritual concept that comes from the word that existed before nihilism, the Latin word, and I can't remember what that word is, but it's like similar. And So you take that and you turn it, this reminds me of the concept that you have the old law, the Old Testament, and the new law in the New Testament. And the New Testament, or the new law, claims to be essentially the fulfillment of the old law. There's nothing wrong with the old law except that it has no spirituality. It has no glue binding it together. It's permeable. The wall that is built with man's written law can be knocked down without the spiritual aspect of it. It's basically how it works. So it's the fulfillment. The new law is a fulfillment of the old law. In other words, you're living the law instead of just being afraid of the law or following the law. You're actually living it in your spiritual life. That's kind of the difference, right? So a nihilist would be the sort of the opposite, or not opposite, but sort of the satanic version of that. It's the old law without the new law. It's one devoted just purely to the destruction of things, to the nothingness, to the state of nothing. And once you reach that point, what have you got? What's your purpose? You can no longer call yourself a nihilist. You can no longer call yourself an anarchist, because you've already done your job. You now have no title. You now have no purpose, because you've destroyed everything, right? And at that point, I think that's the point where you have to say, okay, what is the purpose of this nihilism, as opposed to, or satanically compared to, the concept that's written out in the Bible? The nihilist has nothing to turn to, nothing, no goal except nihilism, right? There's nothing past that. There's nothing that seems to fit, because there is nothing. There is no meaning to anything. There is no purpose. There is no, set rules, set law. At that point, what do you have but hell? And that's the difference between this concept of nihilism or anarchy and the concept of the natural law and following this spiritual path, if you will. Now, you know, you can disagree with me, you can say whatever you want, but I'm going at this from years and years and years of trying to understand this, and I'm starting to see very clearly the difference between the remnant, the remainder, those who actually are the meek and who follow. That doesn't mean you can still be a badass. You know, you can still defend yourself. You can still, in fact, it's a requirement. But, you know, what does the nihilist have to defend is the question. What does the nihilist have to work for? What does the nihilist, I mean, the end result, the end goal, the means to an end, it's nothingness. This is that melancholic feeling. This is that frustration. What's the purpose? What's the point of this? There is none except the destruction of things. And that, to me, I mean, fuck it, fuck. I mean, Patrick, that to me, I mean, shit, this almost makes me want to talk about fucking brain parasites, because it doesn't make sense.
Thank you. So, and this is the question, Clint, that I pose in my book, Eve's Ill, that there are like five or six fundamental unanswered inquiries that the world, in all of its time in existence, has not brought an answer to. And so you're talking about meaning and purpose. So what I have to ask in context of what you said is, when I look at the interaction of small children, there are beautiful little babies that when they see another baby, they run up to the other baby and kiss it. That is their natural, innate response. And then there are other babies, when put in a room with a group of children, will run up to another one and poke them in the fucking eye. And I've seen this, and it disturbs me, because at some fundamental level, that means that there is this delineation between the makeup of these things that we call human beings, that some of us have a nature that is counter to the environment that we find ourselves in. Because let's say that you had a room full of babies that like to hug and kiss each other. How does that work in a world full of nihilists? Because the problem with the hive is the hive only exists to serve itself. And so if you are not a nihilist, let's look at the concept of the Christ.
Well, wait, if those babies are all together in one place and are protected as such, then they are the remainder. They are the like-minded remainder. They have left the sum total of the multitude, and you know, as long as they're not, see, the problem is that one eye poker can be introduced and the next day everybody's going to be fucking eyeless.
See, the problem being that if we had this hypothetical room, the room would still be in the environment of the world as we know it. And I'm the one that said this room, this world as we know it is hell. So we're in our own little, like, isolation ward in hell. And to me, Clint, that's not good enough. So we have to go beyond. We got to know what is the situation of the human entity after death, because then this solubility, this separating out of, are you a water soluble component or are you an oil soluble component? Again, your sheep and your goats, you know, which one are you and where do you belong? Because they don't belong together. So when we characterize, you know, where are we? And you're saying that the Bible is basically a rule book for navigating our situation in the environment that we find ourselves in. Now, I'm saying that I find the environment unacceptable, and I question whether, and you did yourself. I heard you in so many words say that, you know, the Bible is a rule book, but why is it that we can't exist without these rules to guide us, if I can paraphrase you to that extent?
Yeah, well, let me give you some examples, though. Like I said, there's this word. The word nihilism comes from I found this part in my book, okay? Because I've already written about this. This is why we're talking about this, because I've already extensively written on this melancholic notion. Now, and the history of this word is nihility is the only word in Webster's dictionary. And 1828, the only word referencing nihilism is nihility, N-I-H-I-L-I-T-Y. And that's very important because nihilism, the concept of nihilism, again, comes from this revolutionary thought. It's a very new concept, or at least a new organization of this nothingness thought process, the satanic thought process. So he had no other definition in his dictionary in 1828 other than that of nihility, which is a very reasonable word. Okay? The concept of a nihilist, which is a flattering title, kind of like Christian, it's just a modern transfiguration of the word, right? So I take a concept and I make a cult, a religion out of that word. And in this case, it's basically a Satanism thing. There's two verses out of the Bible I want to read because this is the difference. This is when the Bible talks about the concept of nihility, when it says be nothing, be no thing, meaning be no person, be no place, be no legal entity, be no identity, be nothing, only know that you are part of existence. That is not nihilism, because nihilism is the doubt, it's like the opposite of existence. It's nothingness, not existence. So it's, again, it's this Satanistic sort of thought process. So you have the Bible talking about this sort of nihilistic concept, where it says in Acts, I'm in Acts, different verses, different chapters of Acts, it says, for all the Athenians and the foreigners who were there spent their time in nothing else but either to tell or to hear some new thing. Right? So you're talking about apocalypse. You're talking about information overload, which is what we're suffering from today. Some, therefore, cried one thing and some another, for the assembly was confused, and most of them did not know why they had come together. And some among the multitude cried one thing and some another. So when he could not ascertain the truth because of the tumult, he commanded him to be taken into the barracks. It's a whole, you know, again, it's a parabolic story. The point is, this is a description of our society. This is a description of our fucking alternative movement. The assembly is confused. Most of us don't know why we're even here. We know something's wrong, but we can't quite figure it out. Jones full, you know, gives us an enema full of shit. The opposite purpose of the enema. And you know, among the multitude, we're crying, you know, we're each saying one thing, we're arguing over what is truth when there is only one truth, that is nature, that is reality, that is nothing that man ever created, there's no truth in language, there's no truth in words, that's a lie, we're lying to ourselves constantly and calling it the truth. And then you go to 1 Corinthians 1:10, and here is where you see the true meaning or the spiritual meaning of this nihility, this concept of being no thing. Now I plead with you, brethren, by the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that you all speak the same thing, and that there be no divisions among you, but that you be perfectly joined together in the same mind and in the same judgment. Now, which of those sounds like current society, and which of those sounds like the place that you want to get to? You know, even for you, Patrick, who I quote, despises the fucking Bible, why would you despise that sort of statement, that sort of logic and reason, when it explains nihilism and nihility, the spiritual aspect and the satanic aspect, and it basically explains or describes our very society today?
And the reason why, Clint, is because I absolutely resent the notion that a baby that likes to kiss other babies has to be told not to poke another baby in the eye. So let's look at a maxim of law. The expression of one thing is the exclusion of another. And you had said that. You know, give up the name and the place, because it goes on to say the express mention of one thing. And it, in brackets, it goes person or place. And back in the day when the names in the Bible were enumerated, one of the sons of Japheth was Aphra, A-P-H-R-A, who became the name for Africa. So you got this duality of person and place being the same thing. And so when you mention one thing, it implies the exclusion of the other. And you and I had done a show on the word Jew. If you call yourself a Jew, you have just excluded everybody else. And so my difficulty with any outside source trying to inform us who we are is, why, if we are, like Chief Seattle said, part of a web, and if you put uranium tailings at the mine in North Dakota, and the prevailing winds are blowing to Illinois, and I'm breathing in these toxins, why do I even have to tell you not to do that? And nihilism would say, well, if you exterminate the goddamn miners, you won't have mine tailings and you won't have a problem. So that is nihilism. It's disappearance. It's extinguishment. But what you're saying, and this is what I'm trying to draw from your work, is that within each human being, they should be informed of themselves enough to say what is right and wrong and just do it as part of their natural being.
Well, and that's very important, because when we're talking about the law, the what they call the Word of God, when they capitalize the Word of God, I like to tell people there are no words in the Word of God. Word means law, okay? It means what is self-evident, self-existent law, as the laws of nature dictate how we look, how we eat, how we survive. But the law of nature is a separate entity that is the conduct between men that we all call the natural law, etc. We call it different things. My concern, Patrick, is from your work, is the notion that the eye pokers, the little shit babies, the little psychopaths, that is a learned behavior, but the learning is encoded into the DNA.
Okay, beautiful.
Okay, so when you say a learned behavior, you don't necessarily mean because, well, I saw another baby poke, so I'm going to do it. I mean it's a deeper concern that perhaps the psychopath doesn't have a connection spiritually to the self-evident law of nature, which is perhaps why it is written down, why men have tried to capture the Word of God with words that can never actually capture it, right? When you're reading the Bible, you should always be looking for that which is self-evident and that which is not, because that which is not is necessary to explain that which is, right? You can't describe evil without, or good without describing evil, etc. I can't tell you about light without telling you about darkness. So, you know, I say that the Bible has a curse on it. And that curse is simply that whatever your intention is when you go and read it, that's exactly what you're going to get out of it. If you go read the Bible with the intention of disproving it as a history, you're certainly going to find that proof. If you want to prove that Jesus Christ did not exist, you're going to find that proof. And if you want to prove that he did exist, you're going to find that proof. If, however, you read the Bible openly, searching for nothing but what is the truth, what it says, and how you're supposed to be, what its intention is, then you're going to find wisdom. You're going to find knowledge. You're going to finally discover how to differentiate between what is self-evident and what is not. You're going to know what the word truth is, and you're never going to look back, because it simply means what exists. This is the opposite, again, of nihilism. So, which says nothing exists, nothing can have an explanation, nothing can have a definition, nothing can have, right? Which goes back to Mark Stevens, who said exactly that. No, you're an idiot because you're looking up the words in the dictionary. that's where we're at. And that mentality right there, the notion that we're speaking of words, I can't tell you how many people criticize the notion that we're actually studying the words and what they mean, how they're applied, what they do magically to us, right? I mean, people are so nihilistic, that so not interested in the meaning of anything, that again, they're wandering to and fro, completely confused, have no idea why they're here, why they're listening to each other on the radio. I don't agree with this guy, but I'm going to listen to him. Oh, okay. It's just, there. You cannot ascertain the truth, because there is such a tumult of truth tellers all spouting a bunch of bullshit. That is not truth, but we call it truth, right? So that's where we're at, man. And I don't know how to get out of it. I know that we have to acknowledge that it's happening. We have to acknowledge that these people, whoever have promoted this, have done so brilliantly. They've brought us to the brink of our own self-destruction, not only our own self-destruction, but our actual desire for it, which is the greatest goal that a Satanist could have. So any last words there, Patrick? We're about out of time.
Okay, thanks, Clint. Salvation means to salt. To salt means to cure. To cure means to preserve against decay. So it's an antimicrobial kind of thing, bringing us back to that biology thing. But Jesus, the Yahushua, said that he was the Son of God. Who is the God? The I am that I am. No qualification. But what did they do to him? The hive killed him for being what you said we should be.
That's where my job come in. I am a blessing to the mercenary for the corporation selling weapons to them. Any potential competitor step into them. I'm authorized to knock them out and stick a GPS into them.